KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our next hour, writer and comedian Brian Copeland's latest play is called The Scion, and it recalls the 2000 shootings of USDA food inspectors at a San Leandro sausage factory. He used police reports and testimony to research his act, but puts a comedic spin on the gruesome crime. His first solo show, Not a Genuine Black Man, recounted his upbringing in mostly white San Leandro and gained the actor wide acclaim. He'll join us. Then, once dubbed the city's brightest satiric star by the San Francisco Chronicle, Charlie Varon is back with a new one-man show at the Marsh Theater. In Feisty Old Jew, he plays Bernie, a grumpy 83-year-old man who makes a massive bet that he can catch a wave in Bolinas. He'll join us. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Brian Copeland joins us in studio for this first segment of the second hour of the Forum program, the star and author of the long-running one-man show, Not a Genuine Black Man, which will be appearing. He will be appearing at the Berkeley Repertory Theater, as well as The Waiting Period, both performed at the Marsh under the direction of David Ford. He now brings his considerable talents to a true tale of privilege, murder, and sausage called The Scion, also playing at the Marsh. A veteran stand-up comic, longtime KGO radio host, Brian Copeland joins us for this Forum half hour. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Good to have you. And so I'm introducing you, actor, comic, playwright, talk show host, TV talk show host. The list is on and on, and yet often associated with comedy, and this is probably in some ways the most serious thing you've done, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I shouldn't say that, because the last one was about you suffering depression. But...
Yeah. Well, actually, one before last, The Waiting Period was. But, you know, I try to mix it up. You know, what I try to do is take comedy as a means discussing issues that people generally don't want to talk about, dark things and things that are painful, and shining some light on them.
Well, it's funny too, though. It has
yes.
your considerable wit in it. But let's talk about the context of this. It's a sausage factory. Many people may remember the Santos Linguisa factory that was in San Leandro. And those of you who know Brian Copeland's work know that he has a thing about San Leandro. Grew up there.
That's a thing
grew
about.
Up there and,
I live there. I still live there.
Still lives there, and also did a whole show. Not a Genuine Black Man, which is based on the fact that what San Leandro was called the most racist city in America at one point. But here we have this murder of three USDA by a guy who was so privileged and really, mm-hmm. as you point out in your performance, just kept getting a pass from just about everything he did. Went after somebody with a USDA inspectors, I should say. Went after used a baseball bat on someone when he was in high school.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The thing with this and what really kind of drew me to this story, because I remember, obviously, when it happened, it was a big deal in town. I never met Stuart Alexander, as far as I know. And there was a friend of his who I called Jim Harper in the play, who used to work in city government, who grew up with him. And we're friends. And he would say to me every time he saw me that after seeing Genuine, you need to tell the story. You know, nobody but you can tell the story. And I kind of went, yeah, 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 yeah. And then I found an article written for San Francisco Magazine back in 2001 by Bud Hazelcorn that went into a lot of detail about the background of Stuart Alexander. And basically, this was the perfect example of what happens when you give someone a pass and never hold them accountable from birth on. And that's what happened to this guy. He was never held accountable literally for anything. He was violent. He was a bully. The entire city and community enabled this guy because he was the fourth generation scion of this 79-year-old business that was revered in town. So it was just really fascinating to me that he was able to do the things that he did and never be held accountable, whereas me, as an African-American young man, 8 years old on, growing up in that city when it was, at the time, so racist, I couldn't walk down the street without getting hassled by the police, without getting stopped. Yet this guy's committing assaults and nothing happens.
Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to talk about privilege and about racial issues, which I know have always been close to your heart, and some of the things that involve racial profiling in your experience.
Yes.
And there's some funny stuff in there, but there's also some painful and very troubling stuff. It also made me think, as I suppose many people who saw your fine performance, I ought to add,
thank you.
Thought about the Texas, as it's been called, affluenza case.
Yes.
I mean, but you also wound up doing kind of a bit of a meditation on rules. You get into rules and how rules don't necessarily, rules are bent and how rules don't necessarily conform to what is justice or what is the trajectory of what's right.
Rules are rules for everybody. And that's something that we grow up hearing, you know, from the time that we're children, rules are rules for everybody. And the older you get, the more you realize that that's just not true, that there are some people who feel that the rules don't apply to them. And then there are others for whom the rules really do not apply. Because of their status or because they are wealthy or because they're attractive or because they're connected or whatever. And it's one of the themes of this play is how do we navigate the world and deal with the issue of privilege and special treatment.
You also bring your grandmother back in. Many may remember. I was actually a performance of Not a Genuine Black Man. Your grandmother was there in attendance. I know she's passed away now and sad to read about that and hear about that because I know how dear she was to you. But the fact of the matter is that she comes back into this in terms of food safety, and it's some of it's pretty funny material.
Yeah, well, there's a actually, you want me to? Would you like me to do it?
Sure.
Okay. Well, there
makes it easy. We can't do anything politically incorrect. We can't do anything. this is much more in line with. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what this is
I'll unleash you.
I'll set this up. I'm talking about food safety during this segment of the show, and there was a time when I was a little boy, and my grandmother and I were out driving around running errands. I'm 6 or 7 years old, and I'm looking out the window, and I point and I say, "Ooh, donuts. Grandma, can I have a donut?" "I'll make some donuts when we get back to the house." Now, she actually made donuts. Who does this, right?
"But I want a real donut, like the one they sell at the donut shop."
"I ain't eating food other folks fix."
"Why? Boy, quit worrying me. I just want to know why."
"I used to work in a donut shop back before you was born. They used to bring the mix in big 50-pound bags. With this one day, I was scooping out some flour to make some dough, and I noticed a piece of string in it. So I told the owner, he's an old man, he had 3-4 donut shops. I say, there's a piece of string in this mix. We might not want to use it, might not be clean. We reached in and grabbed hold of a little piece of string, and when he pulled it out, I saw little pink feet. It was a rat, a big, dead, gray rat.
Ew!
We took him to it in the garbage round back, and I asked him where he want me to dump out the bag of mix. He say, "Is you crazy? That's a 50-pound bag of mix." I said, "There was a dead rat in it." He said, "Ain't no rat in it now. You better get back to mixing that dough you want to get paid."
So you
mix it up, made donuts out of it. I ain't had donuts since unless I fixed it myself. I don't trust food other folks fix.
"Ooh, Dairy Queen. Grandma, can I..."
"I ever tell you about the time I worked at the ice cream place?"
That's Brian Copeland from his new one-man show, Scion, which has many other voices besides your little boy and grandma's voice.
Yes, yes, lots. And I'll tell you, I do go into the details of the murder. I spent a year researching this case, and I was able to get a hold of grand jury testimony transcripts, and there were some civil suits, and I got a hold of those transcripts, and I interviewed folks. And I give a very detailed description of what happened that day in July of 2000 when these three inspectors who were just doing their jobs went into this factory to give a notice of violation to Stuart Alexander, and he just did not feel the rules applied to him. He refused to comply, and rules had tightened up because you'd had that jack-in-the-box E. coli outbreak, if you recall, and 700 people got sick, 4 kids died, so they were really strict on meat processing because they didn't want another outbreak, and he just simply refused to comply and felt that he was being harassed by them because they wanted him to follow the rules that every other sausage maker in America had to follow. So he murdered these people in cold blood. There were 3 inspectors inside the factory, a 4th who was waiting out front for the police. They'd called for a civil assist. After he shot the 3 inside, he chased the 4th inspector down the street.
Who was African American, right?
Who was African American, chased him down the street, shooting at him.
And people thought that the African American was somehow responsible. I mean, there again, you get into
that. There were people who called in to report gunshots and a black man running.
Yeah,
you know,
so immediately they saw the black man as being responsible for, or culpable for something, and there it was. We should mention that Stuart Alexander actually went to Quentin, died on not to give away the story, but it's out there. It's part of the public domain, died on death row.
I mean, just because you're talking about racial profiling, like shooting at a black man and assuming people assuming, you know, he must be the one who's done something.
Yeah.
You get into the Trayvon Martin story.
Yes, I do.
And you get into it in some ways that show about how the media portrays it. You were actually part of that. I mean, they're calling on Brian Copeland to talk about the Trayvon Martin. What is it, CNN or MSNBC?
I did CNN. I did Piers Morgan. I did a lot of appearances on HLN with Dr. Drew. Yeah, so I mean, I call the media out for the noise around that, but I have to be honest and
fess
up. You
are the media.
I was a part of that noise as well. You know, I have to fess up.
But the satire is really very effective, and you know, those of us who can laugh at ourselves in the media or feel that we're more pure because we're in public radio as opposed to you in commercial radio, you know, can nevertheless get the whole gist of that. No, but what did you conclude from that? I mean, actually, about the coverage and everything. Did you learn anything you didn't know?
It was more blatant, I think, what it was they were doing. I actually had a producer on one of these programs say to me, now remember, I did a bunch of these, you know, the talking head cable shows by satellite with the double boxes and so forth. And I actually had a producer say to me, this is not about information. This, you know, we are not NPR. He actually said that to me. This is not about providing information. This is about conflict and it's about entertainment.
It's about what Deborah Tannen called the confrontational society.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Let me actually invite those of you listening, if you've seen any performances by Brian Copeland or if you have some remarks to make about what we're talking about, which is privilege, about the Stuart Alexander case, about rules and how they don't apply and racial profile, and it's all there kind of neatly wrapped into The Scion, which is at the Marsh, and which you can see. You can call us now. I'll give you details about when you can see the new play. But please feel free to join the program. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls. Again, 866-733-6786 if you'd like to join the program. And you can also join us by emailing us forum@kqed.org or posting anything onto our website, kqed.org/forum. And click on this segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqed.org. The play The Scion is at the Marsh, and it's playing through April 18th. The Marsh is in San Francisco, and actually, here's a big fan. Gwendolyn, hi.
I go to the Marsh a lot because I live in Noe Valley, and I can walk there. So I'm going to see The Scion this weekend. I've seen everything Brian's done.
Thank you.
And the best one I like is a genuine black man because I'm not a genuine black woman. And I had the same issues like, and it's African Americans. Oh, you think you white. You talk white. And, you know, and I ride a bicycle. White people, you think you white because you ride a bicycle. That's what white people do. So,
China, a lot of white people driving
running bikes, right.
Yeah, I just don't understand. A ride horse should do something different beside being pathetic. But with racial profiling, I was at a school. I'm a teacher. And this other teacher walks in the room and said, oh, did you hear what happened in Chicago about the kid, the four-year-old got shot? And this was like a segue into talking about the Trayvon Martin case, because there's where I'm working now, there's not a lot of African Americans, and this was a white woman. So she goes, oh, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton didn't say anything about that. So it's just like I'm under a microscope with African Americans, and it's not so bad with whites, but I was just taken off guard by her saying that.
Now, certainly conforms to what comes across in Not a Genuine Black Man, which is like going to be at the Berkeley Rep now.
Yeah, that show's 10 years old, believe it or not. April will be the 10th anniversary, so I'm thrilled to be doing a special run April the 23rd through May the 31st at Berkeley Rep.
And still, I believe, the most widely attended successful one-man show in the history of San Francisco, and you still carry your humility with you, right?
I try.
In spite of that, well, we both try. We're talking to Brian Copeland. By the way, you know, I can't help thinking or reflecting a little bit when a caller calls in about that. That, well, first of all, we should say the Marsh is in San Francisco, but it's also in Berkeley now.
Right.
When a caller calls in about that this is just ongoing material for you. I mean, when you think about it,
yeah, right? It really is, because unfortunately, genuine is it will resonate now just as much as it did 10 years ago, because not that much has changed.
Also, a lot of people thought maybe Obama was not a genuine black man.
Oh, right? Well, that was the YouTube debate back in 2008. The first question he got when they had that YouTube debate was, "Are you black enough?" And his response was, "I had trouble getting a cab."
I remember also Vice President Biden saying something to the effect of, "Well, he's really articulate," you know, which is also
he's the first clean articulate. Remember that?
Well, and Joe Biden was his choice for running mate. Go figure that. Here's Melissa as our next caller. Hi, Melissa.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say I saw your show at the Marsh already, and I loved it. I thought it was so well researched.
Thank you.
And I loved how you injected some levity into a serious subject. And at the same time, it was such a smart social commentary that I thought got a lot of people thinking, and a lot of people could also relate to it. So I just wanted to recommend your show to everyone who's listening right now.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. There are a lot of things that I'm able to say in this show because it's my first. I tell some personal stories, but it's not really a memoir or an autobiographical show as my previous shows have been. This show's really political. You know, I talk about the 1%, and I talk about the people who are always able to get a pass. As we talked about, I call the media out for missing pretty white girl syndrome.
Yeah, let's go into that.
Want to go into that?
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, well, what missing pretty white girl syndrome is, you know, we see it every couple of months at least. There's some pretty white girl who's missing and captures the imagination of the media. You never mind the fact that there are Latina girls who go missing, that there are African Americans who go missing. And I make the joke in the play that what happens when an ugly girl goes missing. And I've actually sat in production meetings in television, working in television, where they have called it missing pretty white girl syndrome.
I mean, there's also the missing old fellow with Alzheimer's syndrome, too, though. I mean, they're usually white people, of course.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, it seems like lately, certainly. Yeah.
How do you kind of hook onto something like that, though? I mean, it just comes from observation and something clicks and there it is?
Well, something clicks, certainly, and it's something that bothers me and something that's bothered me for a while that I haven't had a chance to speak out on. And I with issues like this, I try to find a way to do them through art as opposed to just going on a tirade on the radio, which you listen to me, you know, on occasion I'll do that as well. On occasion I'll do that as well.
That's what they pay you the big bucks for, isn't it? You got to go on a tirade.
Both dollars.
But there's also just your sense of, I was struck by that last caller because what comes across is your genuine sense of wanting people to think about these issues. It's real.
Well, there are a lot of things that just aren't being said. You know, well, one of the things that I'm able to talk about, and I'm thrilled to be able to discuss in this show, is how this phenomenon we have in America right now, where the powerful are playing the victim. If you are middle class and you talk about the disparity in wealth between rich and poor, you're engaging in class warfare. If you're a person of color and you talk about inequities in the justice system, then you're race baiting. If you agree with Warren Buffett when he says that he should pay a higher percentage of his income in taxes than a secretary, then you hate job creators. And this phenomenon, this thing that they do to make themselves the victim is really just a way of stifling debate. It's a way of dismissing legitimate concerns and stifling debate.
How'd you respond to Tony Perkins when he said, you know, this is like Kristallnacht, what's being done by people against the 1%?
That's crazy. That's just that's one of the most ridiculous and offensive things. It to me, that's just as offensive as something else I mentioned in the show, as conservatives like Sarah Palin and others comparing Obamacare to slavery. I mean, it's just is crazy. You know, the bit I do is that, you know, I'd like to hear every idiot making that comparison talk to an actual slave.
Yes, sir. Yes, dear. I only picked 100 pounds of cotton instead of my 105-pound quota. So the master beat me until all the black came off my back. You can't log on to a website? Same thing. Same thing.
Yeah, go see 12 Years a Slave if you want to make those comparisons.
Exactly.
Let me bring a caller in here, and that's Nguyen from Oakland. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm really excited about this play, and I'm excited about it because it does bring up the issues that we really don't talk about in a society, and that is sort of the issue about privilege that you spoke of. And I think and I'm really excited to see it, and I think it's sort of a larger framework about education and all of our education. I thought was interesting, Brian, you brought up the point about rules and how they're applied, because we all hear it throughout the whole process of our life, even when people in the Senate are talking about rules. If you just do this, you'll be able to achieve this.
Right.
So therefore, as a result of you, you must have not done something if you are receiving services, or if you're disabled, or if you have this. What is it about you? So I'm really excited to see it because it does sort of speak to me about privilege.
Well, thank you. And that's something that's just so incredibly insulting when you have these wealthy conservatives.
It's not only race, class privilege, wealth privilege, it's race privilege.
It's race privilege, too. But when they have caused a lot of people who have been employed for a number of years to lose their jobs so that they can enrich themselves, you know, they eliminate your job, enrich themselves, and then turn around and blame you for not having the job that they eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think that as it relates, you all spoke of class, privilege, race. There's so many different oppressions, and I like sort of coming from the standpoint, let's look at how it's all interconnected, and it is interconnected, and there are ways to sort of come together to address all of it. And that probably goes beyond your play.
Well, some of it's there.
Thank you, Nguyen.
Thank you.
I'm sure enjoy the show. Deal with some pretty radioactive material, and you certainly have been no stranger to that in the past. I'm wondering, for those who saw, like I did, Waiting Period, how are things going in the world of Brian Copeland and depression these days?
It's under control.
The whole play was about depression.
Well, yeah, it was about depression and a
Waiting Period having to do with a gun that he was going to use to essentially do himself in. Yeah,
back in 2008, and it's an issue. Depression it's an illness and an issue that I will deal with for the rest of my life. But it's under control.
Does that mean meds?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh yes, no question about it.
But when you were in the waiting period, you were not using those.
No,
meds
when I was during that period of time, now I was not using. I wasn't using on meds. I was drinking too much, and all of these things that exacerbated it.
So you must have something else in the works, I guess, don't you?
Oh gosh, you know me, all kinds of things. Well, I've written a novella based on the Christmas play that I did, The Jewelry Box, which is kind of a prequel to Not a Genuine Black Man, and that play will be coming back in December. And I'm just starting to make notes on the next show. My plan, I read Abe Burrows' great book, Abe Burrows, The Guys and Dolls, mm-hmm. and Can-Can, and he used to do a play a season, and that's what I would like to do. So I've got some notes that I'm making on the play for next season.
You should also be doing something. I mean, some of your arcane knowledge about the world of television. I mean, you spent too many years in front of that cathode tubes. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, there must be a book there for you.
I've thought about that. You know, we get together with our mutual pal, Jerry Nachman, and we just go on and on about the minutiae of old-time radio and about classic
television. And Bob Sarlat.
And Bob Sarlat. The four of us get together for our quarterly dinner, and we go off. I know more useless trivia about broadcasting than anybody should know.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like, you know, more than you can find in the catacombs. The play, again, The Scion, is at the Marsh, playing at the Marsh in San Francisco through April 18th. And for more information, simply go to marsh.org. And congratulations on another successful play, Brian. Marsh.org. I did say themarsh.org, yeah. Good luck. The Marsh, yeah, themarsh.org.
The Marsh, or briancopeland.com you can go to as well.
There you go. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, pal.
We're going to have another Marsh performer with us in the next segment. That's Charlie Varon, who's doing Feisty Old Jew at the Marsh when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.